Thank you very much. I found your views very stimulating, and I don't know where to begin, but, well, let me just make a statement and feel free to comment on it. I've been in this type of investigation to truth with you in some way, and one of the things that came to my mind recently is the connection in ancient Judaism with Persian beliefs, specifically Cyrus restoring the temple, funding the rebuilding of the temple, the Mithraic mysteries you referred to in your closing statement. And also, I picked up a book recently called Gnosis on the Silk Road. It's a collection of Gnostic writings found in the Middle East and China and such. I also thought about the Manichaeism, the prophet Mani, again bringing back the Persian. I wondered, biblical scholars always talk about the war of good versus evil, or darkness versus light, in terms of that being the Persian influence on Christian religion or Judaism. And I was wondering, as a conclusion of a lot of this investigation, you tend to see that world history is this battle of darkness versus light in some way, which is very dualistic, obviously. And I wondered if you'd come across anything in your investigations relating to, you know, the Eastern recognition of the truth, Persian influences, I don't know, whatever.
Well, the Persians obviously had a very sophisticated civilization, and they were pretty sophisticated people. Things flip over and change, the wheel goes round. Yeah. It's less true today than it was some time ago. And I think all sophisticated people understand this battle between light and dark. I mean, the Templars and the Essenes were very clear, and they used the terms very overtly about light and dark. But I think all peoples do that. And there is a commonality in humanity. And I think a lot of it is not just about direct of coincidence, of people springing up the same ideas. There is shared ideas. Nothing stands alone. The influences on the Jews were huge from all over, from Persia, from Egypt, from Babylon. I mean, the Persians were very important. In Roslyn Chapel, there is one single inscription in the whole building which says that wine is strong, a king is stronger, women are stronger still, but truth conquers all. And that is an extract from the Book of Esdras, where Cyrus, the Persian king, releases the Jews from captivity, and Zerubbabel builds the temple. And that is the puzzle that has to be answered. And it's about the rebuilding of the second temple. So, yes, you're right. They are intertwined.
More specifically, recently I read that the Persians were 2 weeks away from the battle with Spartacus against the Romans. And I thought that this was quite a pivotal event in terms of history, that if the Persian armies would have arrived in time, that the Romans would, you know, the Holy Roman Empire wouldn't have existed. And I thought this was, you know, seemingly, speculatively, a crucial point in history. I wondered if you had come across anything like that.
It's not an area where that I'm qualified to express an opinion on, but I think history is like that. There are certain key points which would have changed everything. If you think about Jesus Christ, if Paul hadn't been inventing what he did, and if James hadn't been killed when he was, the world would be a very different place. The Christianity wouldn't exist. So it does come down to tiny things sometimes. It's like chaos theory, you know, the flapping of a butterfly's wing in Beijing brings you a storm in Washington, you know. Small things have big results.
Thank you very much. Very good.
Hello.
Hi.
I have had a great teacher back in Mexico that was a Freemason, and I learned a lot of things about the tarot. And I have a question about the 8 card that is the strength. And what is the meaning of the red lion in that card?
Of the which, sorry?
It's the
strength.
The strength.
I honestly don't know. I just can't answer the question at all, because the tarot pack is complicated and it can be used in a number of ways. The principal cards have got obvious connections that we can identify. The more subtle they get, I mean, strength is can be used in many different ways. But of course, there were relationships between the cards that add up to 20, so you could see opposite effects. The Hierophant card, the opposite was the devil. You add the two numbers together, so you can learn something by looking at its number and its mirror image. But in no way do I know a great deal about the tarot, other than clearly being able to identify things that are inescapably Templar about them. But I'm sorry, I'm not qualified to answer that in detail.
Okay, thank you.
Hello.
Hi.
I've really appreciated the history that we've received tonight on Freemasonry. I've not known much at all about it. And the question I have is pretty basic. About 8 years ago, I was having a garage sale and decided to get rid of this ring that I had in this box of stuff. It was somewhere from my family. And my five-year-old son grabbed the ring, and to this day he still has it and wears it. And it's always been an anomaly for me because I've never understood the ring. And it is a Freemasonry ring, and it has various symbols on it. One, on the one side it has a 32 degree on it, is what it looks like, and on the other side it has a cross with a rose. I don't remember what's on the top. I know this ring came from my grandfather, and so I've always been curious, and I've always wanted to meet someone who could tell me about this ring, just so that I would have more knowledge of my grandfather, because I really have no more living, you know, relatives that could tell me. So, can you tell me anything about the 32 degrees? And
I'll come back to the ring more specifically, but I have to confess that I'm a very junior Freemason. I've been a Freemason for 21 years, and it upsets people that I know so much about other degrees, but there's so much to go at and look at. I've told you no secrets tonight, by the way. That there is very little that is secret. But there is no one that knows all about the degrees, but they've been heavily changed. Now, that sounds to me as though it was a rose croix degree.
The what?
Rose croix, with the rose and the cross, which is a Christian degree and is a recent invention. Say recent, it's possibly 200 years old. I think originating from the United States. So a very early one for this country. With that symbolism on it, it would be, I think, a rose croix. But it is not one of the ancient degrees. It's one of the Christian degrees, which are definitely additions.
Great.
That's the best I can do on that one.
And do you know, you can't tell me anything about the 32nd degree or the meaning?
I've only got the first four degrees myself.
So but you have to,
no,
okay.
I know the concept. No. The people that are in the modern 32nd degree know very little, because even if what happens is they just confer the degree by name. They just say, hey, you're a 9th degree, 10th degree, 11th, and they don't know anything.
Right.
They're allowed to look things up, but even if they look things up, they'll not find the truth, because they've all been changed. So even if you found somebody to explain it to you, they wouldn't be explaining the original degree if they knew anything at all.
Right. Okay.
So it's all been... it's all been lost and changed,
right.
And it's necessary to get back to these 2,500 volumes to find out the real meaning. But the rose croix would not be there, because that's not an original degree.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Hi. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about the non-Christian story of King Arthur.
Well, it grew in the telling that the round table, you recall, that goes back to the earliest time, and the Knights Templar built round buildings and where everyone was equal. So there's a connection with the Templars there. But the original story was one of incest and battle and death. And Arthur is killed in a final battle. But he doesn't die. He goes off to a distant land in the west to return when the time comes, which is very much like the the destruction of the bloodline of the temple, who apparently died but didn't die, that were there to be recalled in the time of need, i.e. when the Seljuk Turks took Jerusalem in 1071. So it didn't contain a great deal more than this story of the king's strange birth with a... it's like the story of Jesus as told by this French informant. Arthur's mother was impregnated by someone other than her husband, but she did not... It was not adulterous. It was not her fault, in that it was an enforced impregnation where she was in a trance, which is again very similar to the story of how Jesus would have been conceived. So it was a very subtle, strange story, ending in apparent defeat, but with the promise of final victory. And that's really all it contained, the Christian story that we hear later on is very much later.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Christopher. Thanks for coming. It's a wonderful history.
Great.
My question had to do more specifically with what I've read about a split that occurred in Freemasonry, and perhaps you can clear up exactly what it is that I'm talking about with the split. As far as the one branch of Freemasonry that, I'm not sure if that's speculative or not, that went into more worldly pursuits, maybe connected with finance, that type of thing, and the other one that kept more true to the original spiritual development.
Yeah, the split you're referring to happened very soon after 1717 in England, when they tried to turn it into a gentleman's dining club of Hanoverian London and deny their Scottish origins. A Freemason came over from Ireland, and he was horrified to see what they'd done to the ritual. As you say, they'd removed a lot of the important spiritual points and tried to make it all matter of fact, and all they cared about was toasting the king and making lots of speeches, and it hasn't changed any. Only it's a queen now, that's all. But he was horrified, and he sort of led a resurgence, a defence of the old way. And there was a split called the Ancients and the Moderns. The Moderns were the people that were trying to make it all very matter-of-fact and take away any conflict with Christianity, saying it's not a religion, we just have a few drinks and a bit of ritual. And the Ancients were the ones that wanted to keep to the traditional values. Now, the battle continued all through the 1700s, and in 1799, I think it was, there was a seditious societies act brought in by Parliament that was used against the Ancients by the Prince of Wales, who said to the Duke of Kent, I think it was, who was a leader of the Ancients, that unless you surrender, we're going to throw you all in prison. So there was a good abuse of Masonic and all sorts of power there to bring the thing to an end. And in 1813, the two were brought back together again as the United Grand Lodge of England. But they were only united because of abuse of political power and threats.
Kind of a follow-up to that was, does the original branch, the spiritual branch I'm speaking of, is it sort of keeping tabs and monitoring the other sort of...
Doesn't exist anymore. It was lost.
Okay.
There is sufficient in Freemasonry to identify the original purpose, but the real core of it has gone. But it's not... when I say lost, I'm confident we will recover all of it. We've recovered enough of it to know the original meaning. But no one's, as far as I'm aware, no one is practicing it in its true form.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
Do you know what the Ark of the Covenant
Sorry?
is? Do you know what the Ark of the Covenant is?
Well, I think it's a myth, personally. It may not be, but I think it's something that was invented during the Babylonian captivity to, as part of their explanation of their the Jewish history. It was the boat shrine that contained the Word of God, the tablets, which would have been very Egyptian, but it's not known what happened to it after the fall of the temple with Nebuchadnezzar. No real mention is made of it again. Of course, Graham Hancock has tried to track it down in Ethiopia, where the Templars were extremely important, by the way. A lot of buildings in Ethiopia. They were fascinated by Ethiopia. So maybe they did go looking for it. There is connections with the Queen of Sheba, and possibly it was real. Possibly even it still exists, but I really don't know.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Dr. Barry Fell's work concerning Bronze Age artifacts in North America?
No. That's an area I want to learn a lot more about.
Well, I believe that book is here at the Annex. I read it about 10 years ago, and mostly concerns pretty much undeniable Bronze Age arrowheads and spear points and structures, mostly by Celtic communities.
Right.
And there's also some Egyptian finds as well. So when you mentioned the nicotine and cocaine found...
Well, I've been told of these stories. I'm just relatively recently, when I was in Dallas, I was told, you know, amazing stories that they found Ogham script, you know, Celtic script.
Locally. It's a really good book. You might check it out.
Yeah, I will.
It's called America BC.
Thank you. I will check that out.
And Barry Fell, F-E-L-L. But I do have a question.
Yes, thank you.
Do you know any connection with Akhenaten's purportive connection with Freemasonry?
I don't have any connection with Freemasonry directly. There's those that connect it with connecting with Moses, I think. But
Moses?
Mm-hmm. But I don't know of any connection. It's a monotheist, a one-off. But there is no connection that I know with Freemasonry. It seems unlikely, because he's relatively recent.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
I want to thank you for coming. You've answered a lot of questions for me from my childhood. My grandfather and my father were both Masons, and for as far back as I can remember, I used to try and get them to tell me what it was about, and they never would. It was all this secrecy and shroudedness around it, and the only way a woman could get any information, it seemed, about this organization was to join a group called the Job's Daughters. Are you familiar with that at all?
I'm not. There's the Eastern Star, but...
The Eastern Star.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if you had any information on what the correlation was, or if there was any connectedness between becoming a member of the Eastern Star and Job's Daughters and Masonry.
Well, just to pick up on your first point about the secrecy, the main reason that Freemasons are secretive is not because they're instructed they must keep these things secret. It's just they're embarrassed to talk about it.
Oh, okay. That fits too.
I mean, if you explain that you go through all these strange rituals and wear all these strange garments, and they, you say, hey, that's interesting. Why? Well, I don't know. You don't look too good. So that's the principal reason. There is very little, certainly in England, that the only secrets are the modes of identification, which is like your PIN number. You know, it's just confidential, but it's tiny. But in England, the thing is fairly spooky. They've always had nothing to do, even denied the existence of female Freemasons. In Scotland, it's very different. They work together much more. And in this country, I think it's very healthy. They do work very closely together. The female Freemasonry is regular Freemasonry. It happened by error, if you like. But their rituals are identical. And... fully authoritative as far as the male ones are. They've suffered the same changes, of course. But it's a good thing. The reason that it's men only, I guess, because people say, well, if it's this so democratic and respecting females, why are they not allowed to be Freemasons in the same lodge? Well, I guess it's because it arose out of an order of monks. Simple as that, the Knights Templar were all men. I think that's the only reason.
Thank you very much.
Okay.